Welcome to Random Gaming Talk. It's Entertainment Talk's podcast for video games. I'm your host, Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is Robert. How's it going?
It is oppressively hot where I'm at right now. We are currently at 95 degrees Fahrenheit, which is pushing 38-ish Celsius. And with the heat index of the humidity, it pushes it over 41. So tons of fun.
Hmm.
So much fun there.
All right. In the middle of all that, what have you been playing?
Mostly still just playing Everspace 2. I'm still trying to figure out the game. It's one of those games that they don't really explain a whole lot, and you do have to kind of figure a few things out. So, but it's a nice little diversion until I decide whether I'm going to be getting Starfield or Baldur's Gate 3.
Okay. For me, I got finished with, I'm going to call it, consuming the story information on Final Fantasy 16. I did stop playing the game. Then I went to watch it was a 17-hour video. Where I was at in the game was roughly the 7th hour. And I kept watching it and kept watching it. The only problem I had with Final Fantasy 16 in the end, it's not bad in any way, shape, or form, is the story, and this might just be a JRPG thing that I'm not used to, because I don't really play these sorts of games that often. I just thought the characters and stuff were interesting, and people were liking it, so I tried it out. Now that I know what all the story is, basically, I watched this, like, 40-minute video, and it told me the story I needed to know, and even that was a little bit bloated. It just felt really bloated, like there is a main through line, really great idea for the story in this game, but it takes, I'm trying to word this in the right way, because I do not think that it's bad. I do think that it's a bit too long, and it does take too long to get to the point it's getting to, and I think when it gets to the points, the checkpoints that it's getting to, it is very, very good. It's just some of the stuff in between that, and there's so much dialogue. To be clear, I'm not criticizing the game for any of these things. These are just personal observations. It just was too much in the end, I thought. But the story reaches its conclusion. I think that was good. Overall, I think it's very, very good. But if you're somebody who's looking for something really, really long to play, whether it's, you know, trying to get that in before Starfield, or if you just want a really long game to play with really compelling characters and a good story, and a combat system that's quite customizable. Not the system, sorry. The combat itself is, like, fairly customizable because of the rings that you can wear, or the bracelets that you can wear. Then it's probably going to be very, very good. It just was a bit, it's basically like a 50-60 hour game, and I think you can make lots of little cuts to it to make it, chop it down to about 30 hours. Because I remember, if you remember a couple of weeks ago, actually, if we had to highlight a particular point, I remember a couple of weeks ago, maybe 2-3 weeks ago, and I said, I've just gotten to this really big part in the story, it's really getting quite good, and I'm liking where it's going. And I remember saying at the time, that was when I was, like, just over the halfway point, or just getting to the halfway point, and I was like, I don't see what this game has got for another whole half, which is the same length as the half that I've just played. And I just don't really think the second half stands up to the first half of the game. There's some really good stuff in that second half, but some of it's just not needed, and there's, like, a lot of characters and things. So that's my takeaway. I'm not going to be reviewing the game. I didn't really consume it in the right way to be reviewing it. Like, if you were to say, what score would I give it out of the Entertainment Talk scores? It honestly depends on what games you like. Because if you don't like really, really long games, you might get a bit burnt out on it. But if you really, really like that type of stuff, it's probably like a strong must play or a must play. So I would still give it that type of really high rating. But it just depends. It's just a very, very particular game in the way that it does what it does. And again, I don't think any of it's bad, to be very clear. it just didn't quite hit all the notes I think it needed to, and it could have done with a little bit of like editing in places. Like there'll be a few situations where the characters will clearly be saying, we're gonna go here next and do this, cool, let's go off and do that, and then you stop by so many characters on the way to do other things, and it just it almost gets in its own way, that element almost gets in the way of the game itself. Because when you do get to those really big climactic moments or those really big story moments, they're really damn good. But it's just the stuff in between. And there was too many times as well, and I remember saying this, I think, on last week's podcast. There's still too many times in the game, and Forspoken had this same problem, where you would watch a cutscene that was really good, and a character will then say, cool, now we're going to go and do this. Awesome, let's go and do that. And then you'll walk 20 feet to a door or a gate or something, and then you'll enter another cutscene, and then it's just that stop-start sort of thing. Like, there was a bit I did literally a couple of days ago on Final Fantasy 16, where I was under this bridge. I'd just done a big fight, not a boss fight, but there was lots of enemies, and I think it was Jill or someone said, hey, the person we're looking for, we need to go this way. The cutscene then ends, and then it says, here's where you need to go, which is this door that's 20, because it usually has the marker, and it says, like, 20, or a number on it, so you know the distance, and it was, let's say, 20 meters, 20 feet, just for the sake of it. You'd walk over there for 30 seconds, it would then stop, you'd do a cutscene. So if you just take out those just unnecessary sort of, okay, why can't you just have the cutscene flow into the other one, where it's, okay, a character says, we need to go into this building, and the camera pans to it. You yourself as a player don't need to do the interaction of walking over there. And there was just a few too many of those. And like I said, Forspoken's got the same problem with doing that as well. It is a little bit worse in Forspoken. You get stopped a few too many times. It's just a sort of structure and a flow problem, I think, and a bit of a pacing issue. And I don't want games to keep doing that. Like if it's, hey, you're going to go 20 miles across this open world to go to this other place, okay, fine, there's probably some stuff on the way for me to kill and for me to pick up and those sorts of things. But not when it's like the camera and the cutscene pans to the door that I then walk to, so then you come out of a cutscene and go to another one. It's just a little bit unnecessary, is all I'm trying to say. What do you think of what I said there about Final Fantasy?
Oh yeah, Final Fantasy, those games have been overly padded, just like the Kojima games that I can't think of.
Right.
Metal Gear Solid. Both of those games are just ridiculously overpadded with cutscenes and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's not even necessarily cutscenes. It's, okay, where are you choosing for the cutscenes to end, the gameplay to start and end, and then the next cutscene to start? And it's a certain walking parts that are a bit unnecessary. So, anyway, I know what the story is now of Final Fantasy 16, and that was what I wanted to achieve in the end. So that was very good. Again, a very different experience, but still, when I think back of Final Fantasy and the characters and everything that happened, I'll think that was a good time that I experienced with these characters. So there we go. I tried the Disney Illusion Island game thing. I stopped playing it. It was a game I was looking forward to. I remember seeing some gameplay and being quite interested. I found it really boring. I found it really, really boring. I played it for about 45 minutes to an hour, roughly. And, okay, if you took that exact same game and you had the Disney characters in that game be something else, there'd be no... And unless something happens later in the story that's more specifically Disney-related. It's just sort of the four of them. It's Mickey, Minnie, Donald, and Goofy. They just go on an adventure. And while the gameplay at times was pretty satisfying, basically it's a 2D platformer, Rayman sort of style, like modern Rayman sort of style, where you're jumping around, then you get other little abilities. The furthest I got was the ability to jump off of walls, and the one that you get before that, which is to jump a little bit further. It was good. I don't think it's a bad game. I thought it was good from what it was. But, you know, when you sort of, like, because I was playing it, I was like, okay, this is fine. This is good. I'll give it a bit more chance and see what I get and that kind of stuff. And I was like, this could be a podcast game, like one where I just listen to podcasts or something. And then I just sort of stopped and I was like, okay, why am I playing this? It just, I don't know, it's disappointing because I've wanted Disney, especially Mickey Mouse, because Mickey Mouse himself and all his friends and family, they don't really get a lot of anything these days. They don't get a lot of shows or games or films. I know there's a little cartoon thing on Disney Plus, but it all started with the mouse, and the mouse is probably the least active character out the entire very, very, very big Disney roster. So it is what it is, you know. We'll see how that goes. Have you seen any of that game at all? Disney Illusion Island, I think it's called.
No, I haven't seen any of that.
Okay. That's what we've been playing. What I'm going to go to next is Oxenfree 2, which I've purchased on PlayStation. I'm not renting that one. I think it's a digital-only game, so I've really enjoyed Oxenfree 1. I think this is kind of a reboot-ish thing where they go to the same island, but it's a different set of characters, so that will be one that's fun to jump into. And then before we know it, Starfield is going to be here, and it's going to take over everybody's lives. So there's that. Anyways, take a break. We'll do some housekeeping. And then come back and talk about some news. See you in a minute. Today's sponsor is Manscaped. You can get 20% off with your order with Manscaped by using the promo code that we've got with them, which is ETALKUK. That's ETALKUK to get 20% off your order and free shipping with Manscaped. They sell various different men's grooming products from shavers, razors, ear and nose hair trimmers, different clothes and deodorants. You don't even need to Google Manscaped themselves. You can click on the link in your show notes, whether you're on a podcast player or the website. Version of the episode, and you can go and click on that link in the show notes. That's also got the promo code written in the show notes as well, so you can either copy and paste the promo code ETALKUK, ETALKUK. You can either copy and paste that into your show notes or type it in the promo code box and click apply. That will get you 20% off your order with Manscaped and free shipping. First-hand quality professional with Manscaped, from their packaging to the items themselves, even the way the items are stored in the packaging is very, very first class, very professional, so no questions about Manscaped's quality. Thanks very much to Manscaped for sponsoring Entertainment Talks podcast, and thank you very much for listening. Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcast that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps, and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Alright, recently on Entertainment Talk, been a fairly busy week. We'll get into what we've done so far. Excuse me, as of yesterday, we did season 3, episode 6 of Breaking Bad. We're now roughly through, halfway through the actual series. There's 5 seasons, and we're about halfway through season 3, so we've, that's me and David, we've been enjoying that. A little bit of a news podcast update. I've now completed recording and putting together Classic Reviews Season 6. There was a little bit of a human error on my point where the whole time I thought it was season 5, but I had already done a season 5. So that is coming soon as a little podcast. I think it's about 5 minutes or something, giving you a bit of information. It'll be out later this year. It'll probably be out around Christmas time. I don't have an exact date yet. We don't really know what the TV schedule is going to be like between, let's say, October and December, because usually we would cover a show in the autumn or something, and then that would end, and we put classic reviews out. So it'll be sometime right at the end of the year, bleeding into the beginning of next year, basically, which is the idea for it. If you're interested in what Classic Reviews actually is, because it's a very, very different type of podcast and a completely different recording structure to how I do literally any other podcast. There is 5 seasons and also a bonus Disney Pixar season. I've put a link in the show notes for that, to the actual link for the Classic Reviews episodes. So if you're curious as to what that is, there's already a lot of episodes for you to check out. So if you want to listen to those before season 6 comes out or whatever, then you can check that out. So that's that. It's usually like a big process to do all that, so I just thought I'd put that out as some news. I did a podcast called Discussing the Saudi Football Situation. There's a lot of money being thrown at a lot of footballers, which is usually the case, but this is a lot more money than usual, and they're going for a particular brand of players, which is players that are 30 and over or 29 and over. And I talked about the ambition of these players, the amount of money that's being spent, and how, yeah, it compares to all the other leagues and that kind of stuff. So there's that. Over on the United cast, I did a podcast update talking about Mason Greenwood. The club and himself and his family have decided to mutually agree that he's going to leave the football club. There was some very strange wording and parts in both the statements from Mason himself and from the club. There was also a Richard Arnold statement as well. All 3 statements had some very, very weird things in them, which was quite strange. But he has agreed to leave the club, so I think he's just going to go somewhere else at some point. So there's that. Over in the United cast, we also lost 2-0 away to Tottenham. A very, very disappointing defeat. Could have scored a lot of goals in the first half. We didn't. Then we let in 2 very, very silly goals. We play tomorrow against Nottingham Forest. Is that a home or away? I can't remember. I think it's at home. Should be winning that one. We'll see what happens. There's that. Over on Gaming Talk last week, we talked about Starfield going gold and Call of Duty going retro, adding some retro maps in Modern Warfare 3, and also a Walking Dead choice-driven what-if style game. Over on the film review side of things and video game related, I did do a film review for Gran Turismo based on a true story and also linked to the PlayStation game series itself. Gave that a like, must see, very much enjoyed that. That was very, very good. And that's what we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. All right, let's get into some news. Alright, in a bit of a surprise move, we wondered what was going to happen with this franchise necessarily. Little Nightmares 3 has been officially announced, which I'm very happy about, but was cautious at the time. Just to be clear for this week's podcast, by the way, I didn't see the full Gamescom presentation. It just kind of happened and passed me by, and I started seeing loads of trailers coming out, so I just started watching some of those. So that was how I consumed the Gamescom content this year, I suppose. So yeah, it's interesting. This is going to be developed by somebody different. It's going to be the Until Dawn developer, which, I mean, they've got obviously a background in horror with the Until Dawn video game. I think they're called Supermassive. Yeah, Supermassive Games. They're the ones who developed that. A bit of a different style of game, of course, but one of the bits of information that came out when Little Nightmares 2 came out was that if you've played Little Nightmares 1 and 2, you'll know it's very much a complete story. I won't go into details as to why, because obviously spoilers, but there's prequel parts, sequel parts, but once you get to the end of Little Nightmares 2, it does wrap up that story. And I remember the developers, I think it was Bandai Namco or somebody, had said, like, look, we don't have the particular interest to do another Little Nightmares. I think it was the publisher that said we might look at doing something somewhere else. There were some rumors and some talk of a mobile game. I don't know if that ended up actually happening. That wouldn't be quite as great as, like, you know, what we've had before. This looks like this is going to be a reboot of some kind. It's got some different characters. I did see the trailer. The trailer looks very, very good. Looks very classic Little Nightmares. I didn't see any gameplay posted. I don't know if there was actually some posted, but I didn't see any posted. So I'm going to assume there wasn't any. There might have been some interviews and other bits and pieces of information, but in terms of actual gameplay, we didn't see that. But if you've played Little Nightmares before, if it isn't broken, don't fix it, and it very much wasn't broken. You can add to it, obviously, put new things in, but there's no need to change the fundamental core of what this game is. So it looks, at least from the trailer, like it's going to be good old Little Nightmares. I loved the first two games. I think they're absolutely incredible. I think I gave them both my game of the year in the year they were released. I can't remember if I was doing podcasts when the first one came out, but I definitely remember. Either in 20, no, it wouldn't have been 2020. Either in 2021 or something like that. I think I put it second or first. I'm just trying to think back the last couple of years, my game of the year. 2020 was definitely Last of Us 2. 2021, I think I gave it to Oddworld Soulstorm. And then last year, I gave it to Last of Us Part 1. So I think Little Nightmares 2, which I don't think it was last year. I think it was the year before that, 2021. I think I put it second or something like that. Although Crash Bandicoot 4 came out the same year Last of Us 2 did, which was 2020. So the 2021 list, yeah, I'm just thinking back to my own list. The 2020 list would have been Last of Us 2 at the top, then Crash Bandicoot 4 in second. Then my 2021 list would have been, Oddworld Soulstorm at the top, then I think Little Nightmares 2 in second place. I can't remember the rest of my list. So very, very good, and there was lots and lots of really good elements with I must said Last of Us 2, Little Nightmares 2, and it was interesting because there was clearly among the fans a little bit of kind of okay, we're satisfied with where this story ended. We don't want you to like unnecessarily continue the story and kind of ruin it. It was very, very good, but there was clearly a bit more of a sort of we'd still like something from Little Nightmares 2, so could you work something out without treading on the toes of the previous story? So a reboot, I'm not mad about that. I think that's the smart thing to do. It looks set to be another great addition. We'll see how this goes. What do you think about Little Nightmares 3 and what they've chosen to do?
I think it's cool that they are getting another game. I never really played the games myself. People that are longtime fans of the podcast know I don't really do horror games or horror movies or anything horror at all. So it's not anything that was really on my radar, as it were. But I have seen people stream it, and it does look like if that's a style of game that you'd like, especially if you're like more of a puzzle platformer, than like a running, gunning, shooting action kind of a thing, then yeah, that could be a really good game.
One of the things that worked so well with particularly Last stop saying Last of Us Little Nightmares 2 was this, and it didn't get repetitive oddly, this loop of you'd walk down a corridor, you'd hear something weird, and you'd think, what the hell is that? You'd then see what that thing is, it would be a different thing almost every time. And then you'd deal with whatever that was in that room. Then you'd creak open the next door. You'd want to do it really quietly because the game would go like dead silent, and you'd be creaking open this door, and you'd be trying not to slam it. And then again, you'd hear something very weird, like a weird groan or a weird noise or something getting smashed or something, and you'd think, what is causing that? And then you'd see a different enemy or maybe one of the same ones coming back, like the long neck lady and that kind of thing. And it would just work masterfully. It was just, yeah, an absolute masterful game. So I'm very, very curious to see what they do with Little Nightmares 3. Look, if Little Nightmares 3 turns out to be a disappointment, there's no reason it would, but I'm just saying, if it is like not as good as the first two, it won't really dampen the legacy of Little Nightmares 1 and 2, because they're still, as a pair of games, because not everything needs to be a trilogy, as a pair of games, they're still fantastic, and Little Nightmares 3 can't really hurt that game. Like, if you've got a trilogy, let's say, or something, and one of the three, usually it's with films, right, with trilogies, if one of the three is not quite so good or something, it sort of dampens things a little bit. But we'll see what they can do with this one. I'm very, very curious. And I didn't really, because they'd said that before about, hey, we want to kind of explore what else we can do with this. And the original dev was like, hey, we're kind of, we've kind of told our story. And then things just went quiet for a really long time. I guess they've been working on this ever since. And this is what they come up with. So let's give it the benefit of the doubt, see what they can do. Until Dawn was great, very different style of game, but let's see what this turns out to be. Let's talk about Call of Duty, which I'm doing regularly at the moment, but obviously we're getting news after news after news. We got some new gameplay, some campaign gameplay this week, and some very interesting tidbits as well from the Activision, Blizzard, Sony, Microsoft shenanigans. Let's call them shenanigans because that's just what they were. They went on for way too long, and there was too many adults acting like children. So I sat down to watch this. It wasn't the gameplay trailer thing. This was basically a full 9 minutes or so, probably about 7 or 8 or so minutes of gameplay. I sat down and I watched it, and obviously I've only watched it once. And I watched it, and you'd think with somebody like me, I'd be watching this with like really high scrutiny, looking at every single little detail, because that's just what I do with these types of games. That's what we do with things that we love, right? We care about them with scrutiny because we care about them a lot. And I watched the gameplay, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I just watched, I think, like the Alan Wake 2 trailer or something. It feels different this time because when Modern Warfare 19 came out, Modern Warfare 19, not to be confused with it, it's called Modern Warfare 1, but it was the 2019 game. Modern Warfare 19 is its nickname. That came out, and my interest peaked again for Call of Duty, and that was my return to Call of Duty. And then 3 or so years later, Modern Warfare 2 came out, and it was like, okay, what can they do to upgrade this game, to go from Modern Warfare, let's call it one, whatever, to two? And you've got next gen systems being introduced because obviously Modern Warfare 19 was not on the current gen systems. And you've got the haptic feedback and stuff, and you've got new gunplay and all these different maps and a new refreshed version of the game. Modern Warfare 3 does not feel like or at least at the moment, an upgrade in the same way at all, mainly because it's coming out a year later and from a different lead developer. So it feels completely different. So that the what I'm trying to explain is the feelings I had going into news or gameplay stuff for Modern Warfare 2. My expectations were really, really high because I thought, okay, 19 was really great, a really great sort of return for Modern Warfare. Hopefully Modern Warfare 2 upgrades that, and in my opinion it did. But Modern Warfare 3 just is not the same thing at all. It almost does just feel like a Modern Warfare 2.5. Okay, the story's a sequel, there's going to be some new multiplayer ideas and stuff, but I don't know, because obviously you've got different lengths of dev time there as well. You've got 3 years as opposed to one. So I'm not actually when I sat down to watch this Modern Warfare 3 thing, I wasn't expecting it to look a lot different. Whereas with Modern Warfare 2, I remember watching that campaign gameplay for the first time. I was like, okay, this looks different, this looks like an upgrade. So that's kind of how I'm viewing it. So I wasn't blown away by this in any way, shape, or form, but I wasn't expecting to be, because I just thought, oh, this it will probably look similar to Modern Warfare 2, but a bit different. And there were some things like some slightly different animations and like those sorts of things. So yeah, it looked good. It looked fine to me. It looks, I mean, I won't really know until I play it and I actually feel what it is like to play. I've only seen this small snippet of gameplay. But it looks like the COD I expected. So there's that. Let's go to this. This is from Charlie Intel, which is like a Call of Duty account. Some very interesting tidbit information. It says the Microsoft X Sony 10-year deal for Call of Duty that was signed in July. That was a while ago. Actually, that wasn't that long ago. We're almost in September, but anyway, is the same deal Microsoft offered Sony back in December. I don't know if that was before or after the Game Awards. I'm imagining around about the same time. That's when the FTC lawsuit thing came in, didn't it? Because it was around the Game Awards and stuff. In a court filing, Microsoft said it would grant Sony the right to put Call of Duty on PlayStation Plus. Huh. Interesting. We have an email as well about this situation. I guess we should go to. I'll just go to this now. Harry has written in and said, long time, first time, welcome. Says, I'm not a COD player, but I do like following what's going on. Seeing as COD is comfortably sitting on PlayStation anyway, what do you think? So, on PlayStation, why? What do you think Jim Ryan slash Sony were worried about? See, that's like when it came to like my view and opinion on this, because this went on for months, didn't it? This whole stupid like, hey, don't take COD away from us, we're not going to. Don't take COD away from us, we're not going to. Don't, and it just went on and on, and then it was like, hey, we're gonna put COD on Switch. Don't take it away from PlayStation, we're not going to. And surprise, they didn't. I don't know. I mean, of course, you know, whether it comes to people involved with, obviously, like, lawyers and all kinds of different people, as opposed to what I can see, I'm not privy to the information of, like, you know, what was in all these documents and what numbers were thrown around. We don't know all of that information because we weren't involved in that situation. The only thing I can think of, which goes a little bit against what it says here, is that maybe when this deal was going through, they offered less money to Sony for COD or something. It's because obviously, you know, business money, that's what drives the whole industry. Apart from that, I don't know what it would have been, because it seemed to be Jim Ryan / Sony / PlayStation thinking this whole time, don't take COD away from us. And Microsoft just kept saying, we're not going to. And now that we've read this here, and it said this, what is it? It's the same deal as offered to Sony back in December, which was when this all sort of started. So I don't know. On that specific part, Robert, about this deal, and if this seems as sort of simple and as it was with the deal that I've read out here, what do you personally think it was that Sony / Jim / PlayStation were worried about the whole time?
I honestly don't know, because when we talked about it when the FTC case wrapped up and they had internal documents saying that they didn't really care and they didn't really have any worry about it, then that whole thing just kind of became a moot point. So,
Yeah. But because what was publicly available seemed to be, don't take COD away from us, and it was like, we're not going to do that. So unless it was some money thing or some sort of, hey, you've offered us this to 5 years, but we want the 10-year deal instead. And I remember when the FTC thing went through and they said that COD was going to stay on PlayStation, and they said, oh, this is a 10-year deal. And I remember reading a couple of comments saying, oh, what about after the 10-year deal? Well, we'll deal with that in 10 years. But it's also, yeah, I think it will just stay as it is. It could be to do with like small percentages or something, but the problem is with that, the public argument / debate / conversation was, don't take COD away from us, which never seemed to really be on the table anyway. So I don't know. Yeah, that's kind of the Call of Duty update for stuff. So it's going to be on PlayStation Plus, it says here. I don't know which tier that's going to be. Obviously, Game Pass itself recently redid all their tiers with Core and all that kind of stuff. I'm guessing it will be, I guess it will be on, like, the Game Pass version, which would be the second tier, which is, yeah, interesting that, because there was this thing before of, like, oh, PlayStation players will still pay $70, whereas Xbox gamers will just get, the Core thing, which will be online and Game Pass, so that they can have access to COD. According to this here, it doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. I never really had it quite on my mind that COD would go to PlayStation Plus, because for business-wise, if you're thinking about it, I don't know how that specific part benefits Microsoft to put it on Plus. What do you think that could... Because if you're keeping it still on PlayStation as a purchasable game, whether physical or digital, you don't need to put it on Plus. But why do you think that might be maybe a factor?
Maybe money, maybe is a show of good faith of, we're not taking away, see, we're putting it on your subscription plan, so.
Yeah, could be something like that. Anyway, that's the stuff for Call of Duty, so it's going to remain as it is, and the new game is going to come out soon, and yeah, we've got some dates for stuff like that as well. Where is my other bit of news? There we go. PlayStation Portables, there's been a few of them. There's been the PSP, the PSP Go, the PSP Now, probably, the PlayStation Vita, which, from what I heard all these years, was a very, very good thing that Sony just didn't support. There was the, is it called Backbone? The attachment you can get attachment. I made it sound like a silencer for a gun. Attachment that you can put on your phone so that you can load your PlayStation app and have a controller attached to your phone. Well, we knew about this before. It's actually just called the PlayStation Portable. Sorry, the PlayStation Portal. So there's that. There's a few details that have come out about this. There seems to be some mixed messaging out there as well about what exactly is going on with this, but I'll read out the information that I've got. This is from Tom Warren, who's posted an article from The Verge. I assume this is his article that he's posted. Doesn't have to be, but I'm assuming it's what he wrote. Says, new PlayStation Portal details. Says, no Bluetooth. You have to buy new PlayStation Link-compatible headsets. No local play, not even media playback. No PS5 cloud streaming. Targeting same battery life as the DualSense controllers. All of that for a lovely $200. The one thing I, outside of these bullet points here, the one thing I heard was, and it sounded a little bit like strange, because the whole problem with these things for me, whether it's the Xbox's version or playing through remote play, or certainly with Stadia, any of these things are like, put this thing on your phone and stream it to it and then rely on that to play. The whole idea, the whole problem I've had with that the whole time is, okay, if your Wi-Fi dips down or doesn't connect or you go too far away or something, the whole thing's going to be unusable. It's like that time, and not to bash on Google Stadia, but it's like that time I booted up my laptop 3 years ago or 4 years ago or something. And I thought, okay, there's a trial out there for Stadia. I'm just going to see if I can jump on and play it with a free trial. And I couldn't load the system itself because it wouldn't connect. So the whole thing was useless to me because I couldn't connect to it. I couldn't download their games because the whole idea was streaming. So again, with this, if you're like trying to play this over Wi-Fi or something, if you can't, then you can't use the whole thing because you can't connect to it. So it renders it basically useless. What I heard with this is that it will use... let me just make my screen brighter so I can actually see what I'm reading. It will use link, some sort of link connectivity, but that the streaming itself will still rely on Wi-Fi. Because there was this small, short little video I saw where person was sitting on a sofa or a couch or whatever you want to call it, and there was like this link between the PlayStation Portable and the PlayStation to connect to it, but not over Wi-Fi. It was like this link play thing, which I think is something they've had before, something called link play. But then the signal or something itself relies on Wi-Fi, which again brings back to, that's been my whole problem with all of these different things, which is that if the connection you have is not strong enough or cuts out, it's useless. The thing itself looks quite nice. It's basically if you cut a DualSense controller in half and then you stuck those sides to a screen, which is sort of what the Switch is, isn't it? You know, you put the Joy-Cons on the side, you've basically got a controller cut in half that you put two sides on there and you play that. The difference, obviously, with the Switch, you can download those games and play them literally anywhere. Like if it's Breath of the Wild or whatever you want to play. It looks quite nice. From like a design standpoint and stuff, I certainly think this, like, aesthetically, it looks a lot better than the Steam Deck. Obviously, with the Steam Deck, you can download those games, can't you? And you can, that's more of like a proper rival to the Switch, in my opinion, and also is, you know, a bit more powerful and that kind of stuff. So, I personally think Sony should stop trying to do these things, and I think they should try to support VR2 more. That's where I'm sitting, because every single one of these that have tried to do it, apart from like the old PSPs, which had games that you could put into them and then play them like a offline portable thing. I think if this doesn't work, I think Sony should just stop trying to do these things. Like the backbone's fine, like that's just an attachment to your phone, but $200 for this, I think, is too much. What do you think of the information here on PlayStation Portal?
I think in some ways it's kind of cool. Ergonomically, I do like it. It looks a lot more user-friendly in terms of the hand grip size.
Yeah.
I think it being Wi-Fi only with no cloud functionality whatsoever makes it extremely limited in what you're going to be able to use and get out of it. I do like the price point. I think $200 for that's going to be a much easier barrier than the $550 that the VR2 is. But at the end of the day, I just
Yeah,
don't
Jesus.
think, I don't think it's going to have the gameplay function at a high enough level to justify buying it regardless of the price point. Unless there's something they change with the cloud thing, they figure out a way to work. And as for the fact that Sony's now making more devices that are proprietary to its new device, I have to quote Futurama, "I am shocked. Shocked. Still not that shocked."
Yeah, I don't even
Because
watch
they've only
Futurama,
done
but
that with like
that's a
half
good
the
quote.
tech they've
Yeah,
invented.
I don't watch Futurama, but that's a good quote. Yeah, I like that one. There's also the shut up and take my money, which I guess some people would look at for this, but I don't know.
Oh, I definitely think it'll sell well at the initial jump
Yeah.
because of that price point. But I just think that because of the gaming aspect of it, it's not going to be as fun and as useful as something like a Steam Deck, or what is that new one now? The ARO something or other that somebody's coming out with.
Oh, I have no idea what you're talking about, so I don't know. For me, okay, when it comes to Sony and what they spend, obviously they've got film studio and stuff. When it comes to games, what do I think they should focus their budget on? More AAA first party exclusives, that's what you're best at doing. Whether it's from Guerrilla, Naughty Dog, Sony Santa Monica, all those different studios, those big games that people love and that get nominated for lots of things and win lots of things, keep doing those. VR2, keep supporting that. There's a really, really good foundation there with VR2. And also backwards compatibility. I think they need to work on this. Still so many. PS1, PS2, and certainly with PS3, obviously PS3 is the big sticking point. PS4 is not so much of a problem, obviously. Of classic games that people love and would love to go back to. There was a video posted, I wasn't gonna talk about it much because there's not anything new to talk about. Of some new footage from the Metal Gear collection, specifically from Metal Gear Solid 1. And there's loads of people in the comments saying like it's great to be back to this masterpiece, one of the best PlayStation games, not just one of the best PlayStation games, but one of the best games. People still love games like that. And that is a port that we will excuse. Like, we didn't really agree with Rockstar porting, just doing a port for Red Dead. Doing a port for something like Metal Gear is more understandable. It'd be kind of interesting if you remastered it, but my point is people love those old classic games, and they were doing well when they first revamped PS Plus and put like Abe, and they put I think it was it Metal Gear? No, and they put the Toy Story game, and they put like Intelligence Cube, and people loved going back to those, and then they just sort of stopped doing it. And the whole like save rewind function, because those games are a little bit more challenging and they don't control so well, so you'll die more often. The whole rewind, save, instant load, like it would save and load straight away. Or the rewind function is really, really cool. They should do more stuff with that. I don't know if there's licenses for certain things that are in the way, because I'd still like to play Tomb Raider games that way. And that would be a admittedly a more ideal way to play, let's say, Metal Gear Solid 1. But put some more, I don't know what it would take to get those PS3 games over. But certainly with PS1 or PS2, you were already doing it. Because those games were available through the classics thing. Do more of them. People love those games. And if you don't want people emulating your games and you want them to buy them, make them available on your new console, like what Microsoft is doing. Yeah, because whenever it comes now to thinking of an old PS3 360 game, I don't even contemplate the idea of playing the PS3 version. I think, oh, can I get that on my Xbox? Because, well, I've got the PS3 in front of me, unplugged on this desk, but I'm not gonna like put that in and do all that. Like, I'd rather just search the Xbox store for it. Like the other day, I was looking at the Toy Story 3 game, which I'd love to go back and play, which was very cool, and it's got like a toy box thing. I'll probably end up buying it on Xbox because it's more accessible. Plus, I've also got the quick resume thing, which is very helpful. So, yeah, the problem is I don't know how much Sony cares about doing that. I don't know, like, does Jim Ryan care about that particularly? I don't know. So anyway, those are some of my thoughts.
I did find it. It's called the Asus ROG Ally. It's a Ryzen powered handheld gaming powerhouse. meant to compete with the Steam Deck. Problem is that it starts at $600.
Jesus.
So.
Yeah. No, that price point is way too high, and I've never heard of that before. So, I'm trying to think back if we've mentioned that on a podcast. I don't know. We've done like.
No, we haven't.
No, we've done how many of these things?
We haven't.
Yeah, I can't remember every single word I've said on every single thing. So, there we go. Alright, so moving on from that, just a little tidbit that I had. The Game Awards have been announced for December 7th, and it's going to be the 10th annual Game Awards, which is very cool. They might do something cool and special for that. I think it's fair to say at this point, whether it's Summer Games Fest, GamesCon, or the Game Awards, in terms of presentations and awards and things like that, Jeff Keighley's really... I mean, I'm not saying nobody else has stepped up, but like he's the one who's running... He's the one who's running that side of the gaming industry at the moment. And obviously, I mean, I think with the Game Awards specifically, he owns that, as far as I can remember. I don't know what that's what the status of that is with GamesCon and Summer Games Fest. But that's very cool. We've obviously debated a few times as to what's going to win Game of the Year. There's still a few big things to come out, like Starfield and things like Spider-Man, etc., etc. There's lots of games to come out. You excited for the Game Awards?
Not really, just because I obviously Game of the Year is going to be huge slugfest online in terms of between the fan, you know, the rabid fans and frankly the annoying, stupid, shut up fans. But, you know, just between Spider-Man 2, Starfield, Hogwarts, and Baldur's Gate 3, just those four alone. No other game has any chance whatsoever of winning that title. It's going to be one of those four. Huh?
Tears of the Kingdom, maybe?
Maybe outside Tears of the Kingdom, but yeah. Mm. Well, I'll add that in as a fifth one because I know that's going to be nominated, but it's going to be one of those five games.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. Yeah. Would you say Spider-Man, Starfield, Baldur's Gate 3?
Hogwarts,
yeah, and yeah, I'd agree with that. It's usually five nominations, isn't it? Or is it six? Yeah, something like that. I'm curious to see because I've kind of stopped following news about Crash Team Rumble. I wonder if that will get nominated for Family Game of the Year because there are still people playing it. It's still the community.
I've heard
active
that
and
it
stuff.
Was it didn't launch in a good state.
It seemed to launch fine from what I saw. But,
I think the PC version is pretty borked.
Right. Okay. I know they're adding stuff. They've added like engine. They've added Ripperoo and that kind of stuff. I'm just not interested in the actual game itself. And I think it should have had an adventure mode. So, anyway, that's what I got for this week. How about yourself?
Well, most of it is recapping all the news articles and news announcements I found interesting from Gamescom. First up, we talked about this on the last podcast. Baldur's Gate 3 is officially coming to Xbox this year. Microsoft decided to drop its parity requirement. If you remember last time we talked about that, there were some people saying that it was a PS5 exclusive. That wasn't the case. What it was is Microsoft was requiring parity with the multiplayer functionality to be both on the S and the X. That requirement has now been dropped, which is going to allow Baldur's Gate 3 to come to consoles this year. I don't know how much that's going to affect the gameplay on the S or anything else, but that was kind of a sticking point for it not initially coming out until 2024.
Yeah, it seems like with this game, the more platforms, the better. I know it's already out on PC, isn't it?
It's been out on PC for about a month.
Yeah, yeah. It's a game I've heard lots and lots about, but have followed very little, if that makes any sense whatsoever. But people seem to really love it, and that's brilliant. And I do say sometimes, you know, if it comes to IP that's owned, then exclusivity is a good competitive thing. But yeah, it being on Xbox, I know it's on the pre-orders page on PlayStation because I was browsing that a little bit today to see what was coming up and stuff, or if there's anything I forgot about or missed. So yeah, good that that's hopefully gonna be the case. Did you say you were gonna? Like, when are you planning to play it?
Like I said last week, I'm going to wait for the Starfield reviews to come out. If Starfield's good, then I'll be playing that, and that will suck up my free time. Mm-hmm. And if not, I still have to do a hardware update on my PC, because some of the newer games coming out now require a solid-state drive for best play. And I still have an old platter drive for my main storage, because it still works. But I'm going to have to do a data transfer and a little bit of a techie stuff on the PC end. So I'm going to have to get that installed if I don't go with Starfield and I go with Baldur's Gate 3, because I know that's going to suck up a lot of my free time.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. So are you going to still play Starfield or try it, at least even if the reviews are bad? What's your...
I'll still try it. I just want to see how it's going to be, because this is all going to run into my Starfield news. So I'll just go ahead and roll into that, because we did get a lot of stuff from Gamescom about it, and that all came in really piecemeal. And unfortunately, I lost my master list, so I'm just going off of my memory. The first kind of big news update is that they announced there is going to be a new game plus mode for Starfield.
Oh wow!
Which is
If you want to spend the entire year playing Starfield,
yeah. If you want to spend the entire decade playing it,
yeah.
And that's also the first Bethesda Game Studio game to have a new game plus.
Huh. Okay.
Another big announcement is that modders will be able to make whole planets using the mod tools and the creation engine and all that other fun stuff. So I give it about a day before we start seeing modded planets where all the mountain ranges are either tits or cock and balls, or both, or some combination thereof, because let's face it, the internet does what the internet does.
Yep.
And the only reason why I think that'll take a whole day is because that'll just take how long it takes people to figure out how to make it render. If they could do it in an hour, it would be done in an hour. Pete Hines talked about how he's got 150 hours into his playthrough, and he's not anywhere near 100%ing the game. He also stated that a good chunk of the game only happens after the main story ends. So, you know, you got to take that with a grain of salt.
I think this game is going to completely lean on how technically sound it launches.
Yes.
Because from a features and gameplay and all that kind of thing, it sounds brilliant. It sounds like what we hoped it would be. That lengthy presentation they did looked brilliant. That was the bit that won me over personally. I wasn't on the fence. I was very much just kind of, okay, this could be a good game, but we'll see what it looks like. Then we saw what it looked like, and I was like, okay, now I'm in. But yeah, if it launches in a buggy, broken mess, it will all completely fall apart, and everyone will shout and scream at Bethesda. But if it launches very, very good, you're going to see those 9s and 10s come in.
Yeah, and I did confirm it, because I'm still on my Game Pass, and I was able to pre-install it. It does show on my console, if you go into the details, it is launching at version 1.6.35. So there's been at least six more than minor updates to the game from when they had their 1.0 build. So I'm not overly worried now of it launching in a buggy state. It's more of, is all the things they give me to do going to be enjoyable?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Because that was the other thing, because they gave me a ton of stuff to do in Skyrim, and not a whole lot of it I found enjoyable. I found it mostly tedious, actually.
Hmm. Yeah. I think what's going to happen in 2-3 weeks or so, once we sit down on this podcast and we talk about Starfield, and not just the reviews, but like our experience, I think it's genuinely either going to be, this is really, really great and what we hoped for, Bethesda's won, Bethesda's back, let's see what they do next, or it's going to be, what the hell, you had such promise, and it's fallen apart, and this doesn't break, or this is broken, and that's broken. I don't really think it's going to be... I don't think this game's going to be a 6 or a 7. I think it's either going to be like a 3 or a 2 or a 9 or a 10. I can't really see a situation where... I mean, someone hypothetically might play it, and they might look at it and think, okay, technically sound, really good game, not for them. Someone might... And that might be where you're...
Because I was the exact same way with Witcher 3.
Yeah.
I never criticized its you know, its functionality, its graphics, anything about that. It's a very, very good game. I just couldn't get into it. But that's a me thing, not the game thing.
Yeah. That's all. If I'm to kind of summarize Final Fantasy 16 from that, that would be kind of technically very sound, nothing wrong with it technically, very, very good ideas, really good characters and story, but I like some of it and I don't like some other parts of it. So, yeah. But yeah, I think...
At the end of the all the trailer stuff that they showed for Starfield, they did give a little 1 minute teaser trailer for the Fallout TV show. I have seen the video. Now it's a fan video because all the videos from Gamescom that weren't live streamed are not being released on official channels, so all you're seeing is bootleg stuff.
It showed
a squad of four dudes in the power armor, showed a vertebrate flying around. You did get a quick look at Walter Goggins in his ghoul makeup, and yet still recognizable as Walter Goggins, which is weirdly impressive. And it did give 2024. So we do know that it's coming out next year, but no real date on that.
Yeah. Again, obviously, you know, strikes and that kind of stuff is happening. So,
But that was finished long before the strike says. I think it's only just like post-production CGI that's left. I don't know if that group struck it or not yet.
Yeah. So we'll see. I don't know if at any point in my life I've ever seen more strikes going on. Like, there's the writers, there's directors over here, there's like train strikes, NHS strikes, there's the oil protests and stuff, and there's so many things happening in the world. So many strikes going on.
I have seen some of the stuff from the oil protest stuff, and the only thing I got to say about that is that you lose me when you block an ambulance from taking a dying baby to the hospital, and you're unsympathetic about it too.
Yeah.
When that happens, no, I will not cry, laugh, or care if somebody punches you in the head for blocking traffic doing that.
Especially if you've glued yourself, and like, how did you get removed from that, and you have to be physically dragged, but then you're refusing to be dragged.
The people who glued their hand to the concrete, more than likely they're going to have to lose their hand because they have to amputate it to get the concrete off anyway, and they might not be able to be able to reattach it. So then they're not going to have a hand anymore.
Yeah. There are better ways to get your point across than much better ways than doing that. So, all right, what else have we got?
Yeah, back to the games. We got a couple of trailers and a relaunch date-ish for Homeworld 3. For those people that don't know, the original Homeworld came out, I want to say 03. It's been a long, long time. It's basically an RTS in space, but it's also the only RTS in space that actually makes that third dimension, that third axis, actually mean something. The game looks beautiful. We got a release date for February next year, so that'll be interesting to see. It's on my wish list. It's on my I can't wait to see this and see if it's good or not kind of a thing, because I am a big fan of RTSs, so we'll just have to see where that goes.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Have you seen any of that at all?
No, it's not something that's really in my wheelhouse, so I couldn't give any comment towards that.
We did get some other stuff. We got the Crew Motor Fest, which I know you're not into, but racing games are always an easy sell because they look pretty and you don't have to put a whole lot of effort into, you know, gun battles and stuff like that. You can focus on the physics of the car.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So these were like trailers from Gamescom, were they?
Yeah, trailers and news and whatnot. They did announce Season of the Blood for Diablo 4, but the microtransaction fiasco has turned a lot of people off of that game.
Oh, I didn't know that was I didn't know it had microtransaction issues.
Oh, yeah. The season and the micro stuff pissed a lot of people off.
Because it seems that... It's 4th form, right? Diablo 4 came out, people loved it, people obsessed over it, and now Baldur's Gate 3 is coming out or is out. That obsession has moved to that now. But I didn't know about the microtransaction stuff, which would make sense if that's pushing people away and then people are loving Baldur's Gate 3 instead. So, because I've yet to hear someone say Baldur's Gate 3 is bad or even okay. Most people are like, this is really quite incredible. So, I did see the, just to throw some other trailers, I did see the Alan Wake 2 trailer. That's got a very interesting idea to it. It's going to somehow have like live action pieces with, and this is like a Twin Peaksy sort of, you know, timey-wimey. It's a Remedy game, so you know, think of Control and that type of stuff. So it's that sort of thing. They showed some other snippets of gameplay. They looked good. They looked a little bit busier than what we'd previously seen. But I wonder if I think her name's Rhonda, the captain. The policewoman that you play as. Seems like her and maybe Alan are going to have different sections and totally different types of sections. Like, she's doing more investigative kind of stuff. Some people compared that to, like, True Detective. And then he's in more of a Twin Peaksy sort of situation. Because if I'm remembering from what they said about how this story works, it's someone else is like writing the story this time, so he's like going through something else or something like that. But then there's going to be bits where the game version of him that you're playing as is seeing like a video projection thing of a live action version of himself. So that's going to get kind of interesting and cool. So that still looks pretty good. I'm curious to try that out. So there's that one. What other ones do you have?
The whole Mark Kern thing. Did you see any of that at all?
I know nothing about that, no.
Okay, so Mark Kern, he goes by the Twitter handle Grums. So a little bit of his backstory. He was part of Blizzard. He was associate producer on StarCraft. He worked on Diablo 2, worked on Warcraft 3, and then became a producer on the World of Warcraft online game. In 2006... he co-founded Red 5 Studios, and he failed apocalyptically on that. They had one game called Firefall, which never came out. He was accused by several of employees for micromanaging, overturning done decisions, and overspending on stupid stuff. Probably the most notable one that they have physical confirmation of is a Firefall promotional bus that West Coast Customs, that got famous on the MTV show Pimp My Rides. Oh. The bus was intended to be a mobile promotional tour and mobile server to host LAN competitions while the game was still in beta. Project was estimated to cost $3 million. He was forced out of the company in 2013. So he made news by being an absolute idiot the other day from his tweet, the physiognomy of start screens. The start screen of a game...
Oh, I saw this tweet.
Yeah. Can reveal a lot about how rushed the team was and how much pride they took in their world. Starfield's start screen either shows hastily shipped deadlines by a passionate team overworked or a team that didn't care. And he got dragged for that. I mean, he got dunked on like you were trying to guard LeBron James and Zion Williamson at the same time. It got so bad that Pete Hines actually responded to it. Let me see if I can find that real quick.
Yeah, I thought that was a ridiculous thing to say. The particular tweet that he said.
Yeah. He basically called him out for being a fake developer. Because he never actually developed anything, but I can't find the actual quote itself. The tweet itself, rather.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, I've worked on various levels of IT for the better part of 30 years. So when I say something is stupid, you got to understand, you're stupid, my stupid. They're not in the same ballpark. They're not in the same league. They're not even the same sport. And this is stupid. Because what is this going to do? You're just reminding everybody that A, you're a bitter old man. B, you haven't done anything relevant in a decade. And C, you're just going to get made fun of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, his whole thought process has never even been on my mind. Not once have I ever been on a start screen for a game and think, "Oh, this looks plain. Is this game's gonna be really shit?" Like that's never even come across in my mind. I'm like, okay, just press start. Just press the buttons to get in and get started, and that's it.
Yeah, Pete
But
Hines basically said that the start screen was decided on like 3 years ago. And he called him a developer, but he put the developer in quotes. So making basically saying allegedly you're a developer.
Yeah. The only thing I could compare to this in more of a comedy way, because I've been watching more Mind Pulp videos, they're quite funny guys. I think I mentioned them last week. But their whole design when they're doing videos is to specifically make fun of bad games. And there's been, I think it was like once or twice, I watched their Matrix game video for the PS2. They do a lot of PS2 and PS1 games and PS3 games. And they were like, and the start menu they had, I think it was a bit actually bugged and stuff. And they were like, "Oh, look how bad it is. It's quite funny." But that's because it was like all glitchy and it was actually funny. It wasn't them saying, "Oh, this game," like in a critical thinking way, saying, "Oh, this game's gonna be bad." It was that's part of what they do. They're there to make fun of old, not great games or games that haven't dated very well. But that's like a completely different type of angle. What this guy is saying is obviously, hey, this looks plain, or it doesn't look innovative enough, so that means the game's going to be bad. No, it has no relevance whatsoever on what the actual gameplay or any of the pieces of the game are going to be. I mean, we live in a day and age at the moment where things like menu screens or UIs for games, some developers try to minimize what's on screen more. Like nowadays, sometimes when you're playing, let's say, a third-person action game, you don't really always want to have like your health bar and the ammo and all kinds of other stuff. The idea is to make things look sleeker in that sort of way. I mean, what would you have on a start screen? You'd have start game, load game, new game, and then some options or something. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, an endless amount of particle effects and explosions would only be just an annoyance and a distraction.
Yeah. The only other example I can think of with the Lego Star Wars Skywalker saga, there's quite a lot of effort put into the animation of like selecting the episodes, but that doesn't make, I mean, it makes the presentation nice. It doesn't make the actual game better or worse.
Yeah, and he
But
doesn't even have a copy of the game. He's reacting off of a leaked screenshot.
Yeah. So there we go. That's what some people are like, unfortunately. So what else did you have to talk about?
Charles Marinette, who has been Nintendo's voice for Mario since 1996, has announced that he is stepping down from that role and will act instead as a Mario ambassador in the future. Marinette has been the voice of Mario since 1996 and the launch of Super Mario 64, which is universally praised as a great game coming into the 3D era. It was the first one that really could show what 3D gaming could do and look really, really good. This comes after the Super Mario Brothers movie, in which Chris Pratt voiced the main character, but Marionette voiced Mario's dad for the film and also did his iconic voice in that one scene in the pizza parlor.
Yeah. Yeah, he served the character very, very well. Some people get older and they move on from things.
He's 67.
Yeah, so there you go. good for him for doing Mario for so long. Yeah, staying on as an ambassador and stuff is quite good. So best of luck for the future, I suppose. What are they gonna do for the voice of Mario now, though? If
I
they
don't know if they're gonna shop out and cast it. Obviously, with the all the strikes going on right now in Hollywood, I don't think the voice actors have joined in yet. But I do know, because we've talked about that before, about a lot of the stink that a lot of the voice actors made about a year or so ago, about a year, year and a half. We talked about that when it was about the one of the Bayonetta games, where somebody was complaining they didn't get paid a whole lot of money, and it turns out they were just lying to try to get more money.
Yeah, I remember that. So, because next year, It will, yeah, it'll be 7 years since there was last a 3D Mario game, because Odyssey was the lot. I know there's been a couple of other ones, but
And
the
I don't know if the one that's coming out in a couple of months has his voice or not. I probably does.
That's that 2D one, isn't it?
Yeah,
Yeah,
the
yeah,
multiplayer 2D one.
yeah. So we'll see what happens with Mario. But if the film's box office is any thing to go by, people still love it. So we'll see what happens with it. All right, what else did you want to talk about?
All right, well, this is the last one I got, and it made me chuckle a little bit. This is from the desk of, "You just had one job, damn it." So the teenager hacked GTA 6, which the court in the UK found that 18-year-old from Oxford, Arian Kircher, I think, was part of the Lapis dollar sign hacking group responsible for hacking a range of tech firms, including NVIDIA and Rockstar. These intrusions resulted in major leaks of footage from the upcoming GTA 6, a game that Rockstar has yet to officially announce, and the court heard where he leaked it from. And this is what made me laugh so damn hard. Do you know where he leaked it from?
I heard it was a hotel room or something.
He leaked it from a Travelodge hotel room where he was under police custody. I am not making that up.
I didn't know that last part.
Yeah, and that's why I was laughing my ass off, because the cops had him in custody, and he did a hack while doing that. So, good on you.
Yeah, I can't figure that one out, I'm afraid. Yeah, I haven't got an answer or a solution to that one, apart from police to be better.
Laughing my ass off, yeah.
Yeah. So, that's like if a ball rolls very slowly towards a goalkeeper and they let it go past them or something. I'm trying to think of like comparable
It's like
things.
hiring a bank robber to manage a bank.
Yeah. See, now I'm thinking of that second goal we let in against Tottenham, which just p-rolled into the goal because nobody could kick it away. And now I'm annoyed again. But yeah, they got that one to figure out. So, anything else you want to say about
You know I don't follow the sport, so, but
that?
yeah, and that's the last news article I had.
All right, cool. We got one email left to go through because we've already read out Harry's about the whole Sony shenanigans. By the way, if you'd like to write in, I should say how to do that, although there's information in your show notes. But Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, Twitter eTalk UK. Everyone's calling it Twitter, so I'm going to still keep calling it Twitter. Twitter eTalk UK, and there's information in your show notes. Josh writes in lastly and says, "How do you think gaming will continue to change? What types of games, etc.?" How will gaming change? We don't have as many of those like double A games that we used to have. That kind of died off a bit in the PS4, Xbox One era. That was where we started to get more of the Battle Pass games, and that's where we started to get more battle royales. And obviously, Fortnite took off, and PUBG took off. So we had a change there. We'll probably always get single player story driven games because that's like a very main video game thing to do. I don't know. NFTs seem to have died off a bit. Not that that was
Thank
like
God.
not that that was specific game related, but obviously there was game NFTs being sold by the companies that make the games or publish some of these games. Microtransactions have died off a bit. I'm wondering when we'll get away from the era of loot boxes and microtransactions, because you've got some games that do have one or two battle passes and microtransactions and loot boxes and also cost $70. There are some games out there that do that kind of thing. I was very disappointed when Call of Duty introduced Black Cell, which is a more expensive battle pass that actually offers so much less than what the normal battle pass does. But that's again a premium full priced game. I remember on the show when I read out the first thing that was going to be in Black Cell, and I was like, well, I said, why are you doing this? Obviously, for money is why they were making it. And it's disappointing to see that now in the promotional material for Modern Warfare 3 as well, to see, hey, if you pre-order this, you can get this, and you can get this, and Black Cell, and buy everything, and give us all your money. So, but I guess that's part of business. I don't know. I don't know when that next, because we used to have like in that 360 PS3 era where there was more kind of more experimental games, more AA games. And that's when we started dying off from the film license games as well. Obviously, the PS1 and PS2 era had that quite a lot. PS3 had that somewhat, then that started dying off. And we haven't really had any in the PS4 era. I'm wondering when we'll... Because the shift initially to me, I remember when we started getting codes for, like, season passes. Those sort of kind of got renamed to battle passes, although you can still get season passes. But there was, like, online memberships and things that you could buy. And things like microtransactions and loot boxes weren't really a thing then. One of the first games I remember having any kind of loot box type thing was FIFA Ultimate Team. That was all the way back in 2011. I want to say 2010, 2011. That was when Ultimate Team got introduced. But I don't know, in another 10 years or so, we'll get another shift. There'll be another thing that comes along. You'll probably always have those greedy companies that have microtransactions and loot boxes in their games. It just depends on how that goes, I guess. So I don't know, that's kind of my answer to that question. What do you think?
I think this is more of a function of my age than anything else. It's just that I remember when everything wasn't even a thing, like until Xbox Live became a thing. Online patches weren't really a thing outside of an occasional PC game that got a patch. Console gaming, you got what you got, and that's what you got, and that's all you got. There was no DLC. There were no patches. There were no updates. I remember the online pass that was a thing for a hot minute, and that thankfully went away. I don't mind the loot boxes as long as they're not anything you have to pay real-world money for. If it's something that you can earn through gameplay and it doesn't affect your win rate, I'm all for it because that's, you know, just a way to show something off and be cool. Mm-hmm. But if it's something you have to pay for, then that's not cool. Yeah. Obviously, DLC is something completely different because that's a whole other add-on to the game, which required time and labor and talent, and you have to pay for that. So I don't care paying for DLC, with the rare exception of it's something that got cut that was supposed to be part of the launch and then added in as a feature later for more money.
Yeah. One thing I do kind of miss, and this was more of a PS1 thing from what I remember, is when you had those games that were really, really big, like a Final Fantasy. I think one of the GTA games had it as well, can't remember, is you'd get halfway through a game and it would be like, please insert disc 2, and you'd be like, oh, cool, I got to, like, a new chapter, a new checkpoint, and you'd literally physically take the disc out, put it in, and then you'd carry on. It wasn't something that was, like, necessary for a game to be cool, it was just a cool idea, but now games are digital, and yeah. Also, remember when you opened certain PS1 cases and you'd have, like, double discs and you'd have the thing you can flip over, and it felt like there was, like, almost more in there. It was kind of special, so...
Yeah, the lack of physical games is annoying to me because of things like that. Like, even if you bought the collector's edition of Starfield for $200, you don't even get a CD, you just get a redemption code.
Yeah. And that goes to, like, you know, physical media and people like having physical media on their shelves, and you can look at that stuff and, I don't know, have memories of that sort of thing. It's like I've got the Toy Story DVDs on my shelf, and I look at those. It's not necessary for me to have them because I can watch those films on streaming, but then they're very special and everything, so I have them there. In fact, on this desk in front of me, I've got other different copies of... Wait, hang on a second, which ones are these? We sorted out this room recently and we found some older DVDs. We've got Toy Story 2, Toy Story 1, Monsters, Inc. and Dinosaur. And I just took those out of one of the boxes that we had because they were... Yeah, I just felt like having them on this desk. So, here we go. cool. I think that's it for the podcast this week. Mm-hmm. Some game cons, some games con stuff, some funny stuff, some updates about games, and we'll see what happens next week. But in the meantime, thank you very much for listening. You can find everything else that we do on entertainmenttalk.org. TV, games, films, main night podcasts. At the moment, we've got Gaming Talk going on. We've got Breaking Bad halfway through that. Got some film reviews continuing. United Cast is back. That'll be weekly at the moment until the other competitions start. Some TV stuff, and then just the odd other podcasts I make. And also remember, Classic Reviews Season 6 has been completed, and you can listen to Seasons 1 through 5 and the bonus season if you'd like to do so as well. Yeah, entertainmenttalk.org, podcast platforms, Entertainment Talk, TV, games, films, main night podcasts. If you want to support us in other ways, you can listen to more of what we've got, either by checking out the site or the podcast platform things. You can use word of mouth from social media, let other people know about what we're doing. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers, ad-free podcast review options, look at that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news, obviously updates about the strike, renewals, cancellations, pickups, air dates, all kinds of stuff. Geektown Radio on Tuesdays, geektown.co.uk. So check out that. Bex, who's also involved with all this as well, she's streaming on Twitch as well, TristaBYTES. You can also follow her on, I think, all the other platforms. Pretty much just go and support what she's doing. You can find me as well on Twitch occasionally at eTalkUK and YouTube Entertainment Talk Plays. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.